Okay, and with that, it's time for Acoustic Ceiling, folks. Welcome to the program. I'm Vin Magazzini, and it is 4:02 and 35 seconds. The date is November 10th, 2018, and I'm so glad you're with me here on Acoustic Ceiling. We're here every single Saturday at 4 o'clock. We're here till 5 o'clock, and we're brought to you by Tufts University Freeform Radio, and it's non-commercial, and thank you, Tufts, for having us. We really appreciate it. If you want to send money to Tufts, you can do that. You send it to WMFO.org. Keep us commercial-free. Keep us on the radio. We will be back in just a moment to start the show. Just so you have it, 855-915-9636 is the phone number. That's 855-915-9636. Please call in. We'd love to talk to you about poetry, about your life and what you care about. And with that, we will start off the show. So remember, this is Tufts University Freeform Radio. And here we go. Without further ado, it is time for a PSA. And I think you'll like this PSA. I know I do. Let me grab the PSA. Excellent. Here's the PSA.
This is Billy Bob Neck. Billy Bob Neck's out of being good on WMFO in Medford. If you're a freeform loving, latte sipping, New York Times reading, Volvo driving, godless liberal defeatocrat, you might want to thank WMFO for 40 years of corrupting your soul by sending a donation to http://support.wmfo.org or mail a check made out to the trustees of Tufts College to this address: WMFO, attention, Satan, Post Office Box 65, Medford, Massachusetts, 02155. Of course, you might wind up in hell, but it's your choice. Going to heaven or supporting WMFO by going to http://support.wmfo.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
And your friends here on WMFO in Medford. And on today's program, we have Ryan Hendrickson. And Ryan has edited a book of poems, or a collection of poems, I should say. And the book is called Bloom, and it's just released. And I'm happy to say we're going to talk to Ryan Hendrickson on today's program, Acoustic Ceiling. We'll play a little bit of music, but we're mainly going to talk about writing and his collection, Bloom. Welcome to the program, Ryan.
Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. So, Ryan, what I would like you to do is start off the show with, let's start off the show with you telling us all about Bloom and the origin of it, the genesis of Bloom.
So I've always been interested in poetry ever since I was young, really. But I ended up kind of turning to poetry, as a lot of people do, when I was in, you know, darker parts of my life, you know, times when I wanted to hear about, you know, how other people were going through things, and it kind of supported me through those periods. And, you know, as I more and more started to write, I also realized that other people were writing too. So I had an idea in my head way back about just, you know, collecting a bunch of poems that I liked. And I figured, you know, there are a lot of ways to meet poets. You can go to, you know, poetry events, slam poetry, you know, events. But I decided that I kind of wanted to, you know, put together my own event, so to speak. And it ended up starting with me trying to create a website and get people to submit their poetry to that, and kind of turn it into a competition, which is why I called it Poem Wars, like Star Wars, Poem Wars. and I couldn't get anyone to join it because I just put it on the internet and hoped that people would see it and put a few ads up, and it was, you know, 5 or 6 people would submit things. So I figured, you know, maybe I should put this on a social media.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up realizing that Instagram has a huge amount of people writing poetry, millions of people. And so I decided to put that community on there and started a page. And I started by posting other, you know, other people's poetry, like famous poetry, Robert Frost and T.S. Eliot, Charles Bukowski. It was a personal favorite of mine. And more and more people started following the page, and eventually I realized, you know, the point of this is sharing modern poetry, so I started reposting other people's work. And the reaction was, it was amazing. Everybody was, you know, putting contemporary poems on there that people were really connected with and related to. You know, I was getting lots of followers and lots of interest, and it kind of evolved over time where I thought, you know, maybe I should take a bunch of these people and put them in a book together. So that's kind of the genesis, and Bloom kind of started.
How many writers are in Bloom?
Over 75.
Wow.
I should know the exact number, but, you know, I kept adding people last minute, to, you know, filling in the spaces, and now I know it's somewhere over 75, mm-hmm. I think less than 80. Yeah, but a lot.
Excellent.
And a lot of different places, too.
So Bloom is poems of loss, heartbreak, and new beginnings. It's edited by RJ Henriksen. That's Ryan, who's here in the studio with me. We'd love to take some questions and talk to you about poetry and about Bloom, listener. So please, it's 855-915-9636. Why don't we kick off with, you said those about, is it 2 pages of writings you wanted to kind of introduce the book to? You mentioned.
Yeah, actually, I think we could start with a quote.
That's what I mean. Let's start with the quote.
Yeah, so I decided to pick a theme for all this poetry to kind of make it a cohesive book that, you know, everything went together and everything felt like it was part of a larger story. So I picked a theme of grief and loss, because it's something that I think affects a lot of people. And returning to Massachusetts, I saw a lot of grief and loss, you know, people, you know, passing away, or, you know, overdoses and suicides. And it was something that I realized, you know, was a really pertinent theme. So I had people submit their poems and selected them based on how pertinent I thought they were to that theme. So I put a quote in the beginning from Little Prince, that it's so mysterious, the land of tears. And I thought that kind of represented, you know, put out the question of what I was trying to examine in the book, which is, you know, the mystery of grief, you mm-hmm. know, of the feeling of sadness and grief and heartbreak. Because I think it's something that people don't really talk about.
Mm-hmm. With the recent horrible events with the shootings in California and not too long ago in Pittsburgh, do you want to touch on that at all? Because it was really striking last night. I was watching the news, and a woman whose son died, the son actually survived in Las Vegas.
I heard that. Yeah,
and then really died in California. She said, "Do not send me any more prayers. I don't want any thoughts or any words of wisdom. I just want gun control."
Yeah.
And I thought that was really striking.
That is, yeah.
Yeah.
I think some people deal with grief through practicality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a childhood friend who passed away due to essentially a freak accident. And his parents wanted to address that,
mm-hmm.
and not to go into too much detail about it.
Sure,
but
sure.
You know, it was a public health concern, and they really wanted to address that. And that was their reaction when people asked them about it. It was, no, we want to take care of this issue,
mm-hmm.
practically talk to the town, yeah. talk to, you know, making sure this never happens to other people. And then I've seen other people, parents of children who've committed suicide,
mm-hmm.
Who don't. They disconnect.
Right.
They don't really know what they're going through. People kind of go to support them, and there's not a clear way to get out of that experience and process it.
Right.
So in terms of the recent events, I think the country feels that feeling very strongly.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe subconsciously I lined this up because of a lot of the tragic events that have happened over the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's sort of like mental illness. What is going on is so far deeper than someone struggling that you see on the street or a stranger who's having an episode or something. There's layers and layers and layers of perhaps misery or about sad history, about awful experiences. And it's very difficult to connect to someone who has mental illness or someone's, you know, who's heartbroken and, exactly. and truly, you know, emotionally distraught.
Well, and that's, I think if I was to give a purpose to this book,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what I would say. It is, I realized through my own experiences, I had a close friend or ex-girlfriend who overdosed when I was in college, and she was a big fan of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of connected through that and processed my grief through writing,
mm-hmm.
specifically poetry.
Right.
And I know that from what I've seen, and it's become very, very clear running this community and getting poems submitted to this book, that a lot of people process, either don't know how to process their grief, and some people have found that art in particular is the way that they can do it best.
Sure.
So it's a therapeutic experience. And,
oh, God, yeah.
And I think that when you see a lot of, a huge volume of poetry that's about these themes,
mm-hmm.
it becomes very clear that this is one of the best outlets for people to kind of make sense
mm-hmm.
of those experiences.
Yeah.
And for me, I was like, you know, if I can create a better outlet for that, and people who are processing those feelings and don't really know where to turn, they can look at this book and mm-hmm. see that they're not alone, that other people are going through that.
Absolutely. I think art is one of the best ways to process grief and just process life. I mean, sure, sometimes there's comic relief where you just want to forget about things and just laugh off things. But other times when, you know, art, whether it's movies, film, music, poetry, can make you have a understanding a little bit about what you're going through and what the big picture is, like in the cosmic sweep of things, what yeah. matters.
Yeah, and the funny thing is I think there's a lot of grief in comedy.
Sure.
You know, and
there can be.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was telling someone this story the other day. I think it's from the book Watchmen, actually. But there was this story of Bozo the Clown is coming into town,
mm-hmm.
and a guy goes to a psychiatrist or a doctor and says, "Doctor, I've been suffering. I feel a lot of pain and depression, and I don't know what to do." And the doctor says, "Oh, Bozo the Clown's coming to town. Why don't you go see the show? It'll cheer you up." And he says, "That's a problem. I am Bozo the Clown." Yeah. And,
oh, wow.
You know, and that, it's a good example of mm-hmm. one of the ways in which we don't really, you know, understand what people are going through.
That's right.
And we make a lot of assumptions, you know, based on how people yeah. act surface level.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like the comic Lenny Bruce. I mean, a lot of the stuff he did, sure, some of it was outrageous and he was a sick comic. You know, that's what he's, in quotes, labeled. But there's a lot of tenderness if you really look into what he had to say and what he cared about. And, he did this whole routine about how, I don't know if you know it, it's when John F. Kennedy got assassinated, that his wife, she wanted to get out of there. And it wasn't necessarily making fun of her. It was just sort of like, this is something a person would go through and do. And Lenny Bruce, he was called sick. You know, we can't talk about such things. But the yeah. fact is, you know, she's not a queen.
Yeah.
She doesn't have superpowers. She wanted to stay alive in the moment, of course.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, the opposite of that, or Lenny Bruce didn't talk about it, you know, Clint Hill, he went into a deep depression because he didn't react in 1 second's time to save the president, or he thought he couldn't have saved Kennedy when he was shot, but he was a bodyguard and he was yeah. on the back of the car, and he for years and years and years tortured himself because he blamed himself for allowing the president to die.
Yeah.
And what, you know, think about what he had to go through.
That makes sense.
It's fascinating.
Very
yeah.
tragic.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think if you're going to look at one side as comedy, I think comics, they say things that are funny because they're true.
Right.
And a lot of times that's what, you know, we want. We have a hard time looking at the truth, and so they say it, and we laugh.
Yeah. There's an old cliche. It's comedy is tragedy plus time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you like to read the introduction? Again, before Ryan begins, this is Ryan Hendrickson, and he's reading from Bloom. It's a collection of poems. They're poems of loss, heartbreak, and new beginnings. Ryan?
Okay, so I wrote the part of the book that I actually wrote was a small parable that weaves throughout the book, and it is essentially divided into six parts, heading the chapters of the book. I was trying to find a way to create some grouping for each of the poem, you know, thematically, and as the book progresses, the story progresses, and the poems kind of follow the feeling of each part of the story. So this is the story I call The Well, and this is the first chapter that starts the book. The boy woke up in a well. He slowly lifted his head out of the tepid, muddy water, which lay in a shallow pool at the bottom, surrounded by an echoing darkness. The drought that had stretched for 40 days had consumed most of the grasses in the fields and twisted them into a withering grayness, the land slowly drained of life under the scorching sun. The once full well had slowly emptied, day after day. Now the water lay only inches from the bottom, just enough to reach his nostrils and scrape cheeks caked in dirt and cause him to splutter awake. Putting a hand on the wall, the boy leaned back, eyes squinting, taking in the sunlight high, high above, now a pinprick in the dark tunnel that surrounded him like a tomb. Sana, Ramit! He yelled up to the ground far above, but no one answered. The walls were lined in a thick layer of slippery moss that broke under the trail of his fingertips, the stones worn and smooth by centuries of rain. The boy wondered why the rain had stopped. Some of the elders said it was because the gods were angry at man, and that this year spring would not come. As he rose to his feet, a sharp pain coursed through his leg like a lightning bolt, causing him to gasp. His ankle looked bent and swollen, and blood pooled around the bottom of his sandals as it dripped down deep scrapes that ran along his leg. Breathing in deeply, he looked up again at the distant light, his voice too choked in fear to yell. The fear surrounded him, rising higher than the walls, thicker than the darkness. One thought alone echoed through his head, I am going to die. And the first poem that follows that is a poem by this guy, Sam Baker, from Nigeria. And he says, I'm no longer the man I used to be. The night doesn't speak to me anymore. It's called Flowers and Thorns. So the book kind of starts off on that note. To me, it means the idea of hitting rock bottom, kind of going into our the deepest place of darkness that we can go, be it kind of ricocheting after a experience of loss or grief or heartbreak. We kind of hit rock bottom. We don't know where we are.
Do you want to read that poem, Ryan?
The first one?
Well, the Flowers and Thorns. Is that the one?
Oh, yeah, that was the one I just read. I'm no longer the man I used to be. The night doesn't speak to me anymore.
Oh, it's very brief one. Yes.
I jumped into it, yes. Some of the poems are a little bit longer. Some of them are very brief.
How about another one? And if you could preface, before you read it, tell me who wrote it, please.
Sure. So this is one by Brian. That's it. Not all the poets wish to have their full names in there.
Is it titled?
Yeah, it's called You Laughed.
You Laughed, okay.
Another very, very simple short poem. You laughed and felt like a stranger. Life has hurt too long. Brian's from San Diego. Some of the poems are very simple. They express more of, you know, more of these kind of tangential feelings that people have and these experiences. I can read a little bit of a longer one.
Sure. What is this one titled, please?
So this one's called Blue Roses Wilting. It's by a girl, CMR Bayan.
CMR?
Siomar. So Siomar. And last name is Ballan. Either Balan or Bayan. I'm not sure which, but she's from London. The poem goes, "Where did you go? I saw the blue roses begin to weep and wilt this frosted morning, and azure skies closing over gray. Something left me today, and the world looked quite the same to all but me. I felt an absence between my heartbeats. I heard a mournful echo between the stop and start of the breeze, and a laughter breaking down, slumping low into muffled tears. He told me everything is waiting for me, but that's not what I've seen. Maybe everything will be beautiful again tomorrow."
Very nice. Is there one factor, would you say, in poem wars in terms of like, is it war? Is it heartache? Is it just sort of misery? I love it. It's new beginnings also, besides loss and heartbreak. What would you say, like, is there a two or three overriding themes, or is there one in particular?
So I see it as more of a progression. And, you know, be it grief or heartbreak, I see them as experiences of loss. So you lose someone you love, mm-hmm. in different ways. And more, I kind of style it, each chapter is, you know, the actual experience of that itself, you know, hitting rock bottom, as I said. And then as the book progresses, more of a reflection on those experiences, maybe wallowing in your own sadness or trying to understand it,
mm-hmm.
Working to process it and get out of it. Eventually, you know, sometimes that happens and we don't process it and we don't overcome that experience and our life falls apart again,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's not something that is always an upward progression. It can keep going down. But in the end, it's new beginnings represents that usually these experiences, as terrible as they are,
mm-hmm.
we come out the other side changed.
Sure.
You know, either matured or, you know, on an emotional level, a spiritual level even, or we come out just having had more experience in life and mm-hmm. knowing ourselves better. And, you know, it's hard to look at these experiences as being a good thing.
Right.
Because they're so painful.
Sure.
But often, on a personal level, we do grow from having undergone, you know, that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard sometimes to look at them and say, not only is this something I can grow out of, but maybe something that in the long run I'll look back on and I'll say, I've changed for the better,
mm-hmm.
through something that's been so terrible,
right.
that you would never wish upon someone or wish upon yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But you can look back and say, I have become a stronger person because of it.
Yeah, life is all about learning, and it's all about having fun. It's not strictly about one or the other. It's about both things, because sometimes learning can be fun, but sometimes it can be very painful. And yet those two things are what life is all about, ultimately.
Absolutely.
One thing I was thinking about was this song. It's about a look back on days of war by a soldier or by a veteran. And in terms of your book, Bloom, Poem Wars, I thought about how someone who's a veteran who can't relate, and perhaps they commit suicide. And this particular poem, I never thought of it in those terms until recently. It's all about looking back about what war did to the person. And it's called Tender Comrade, and it's by Billy Bragg, and here it is.
What will you do when the war is over? Tender comrade, when we lay down our weary guns, when we return home to our wives and families, and look into the eyes of our sons, what will you say of the bond we had? Tender comrade, Will you sigh that we were brave? As the shells fell all around us. Oh, that we wept and cried for our mothers and cursed our fathers for forgetting that all men are brothers. Will you sigh that we were heroes? Or that fear of dying among strangers tore our innocence and false shame away. And from that moment on, deep in my heart I knew that I would only give my life for love. Brothers in arms, in each other's arms, was the only time that I was not afraid. What will you do when the war is over, tender comrade? When we cast off these khaki clothes and go our separate ways, what will you say of the bond we had? Tender comrade.
When we cast off these khaki clothes and go our separate ways. That's Billy Bragg with Tender Comrade from his album Work is Playtime. And now back to poetry with Ryan Hendrickson. We're talking about Bloom. It's a collection of poems. And if you want to join the conversation, call 855-915-9636 and let us know. What do you think about what we're talking about? What do you think about poetry? What do you think about this subject? We'd love to hear from you. And Ryan, to get back to your book. There's many, were most of the people from the States that contacted you? You said there was over 75 writers.
Yeah, so the way that I, initially when I wanted to make the compilation, I actually was contacting people in the Instagram community. So people who either I had already shared their work on my page or I, you know, admired their work elsewhere. But I had a hard time actually getting people to commit to it, which it was interesting. And I was like, you know, I'm going to give you free publicity and you know, show your poems to a large audience. And they were a little resistant. Mm-hmm. And I eventually realized that with people, with their art, sometimes it can be, you know, I think of, you know, if you have your art, you want to spread it far and wide. Mm-hmm. Some people, it's just kind of a practice for them. They don't really want other people to see it too much, right. You know. So what I did was I decided to open up the submissions to my entire community, which I think at that point was about 8,000 or 9,000 followers, mm-hmm. somewhere in that range. And I got a lot of submissions. Actually had a little hashtag campaign. It was I am in bloom, the hashtag I am in bloom, which I like the double entendre, but I don't think most people appreciated it. But anyway, so I got a couple thousand submissions, you know. So it took me about a month to read through all of them and select. And then it took me another month to contact everyone and get all their information and get them on board. Mm-hmm. The remarkable thing that I saw when I picked all of them was, you know, I picked things that had what I thought were the same voice that seemed to be almost one, you know, kind of collective conscious of people, mm-hmm. and they're from so many different places, not just around the U.S. but around the world. You know, people from Sweden and Pakistan and India and Australia, New Zealand, different parts of Africa. You know, people who you wouldn't necessarily, English was probably second language mm-hmm. for them, and you know, they're so eloquent in the way they spoke. Right. And I think India is a very large English-speaking population at this point. And,
sure.
I had a lot of submissions from Indian poets, and I thought maybe because that's become such a new, it's a new form of expression for someone who's picking up English for the first time. It's an interesting exercise for someone to write poetry. But yeah, anyway, I was pretty amazed by, I wasn't going to ask where they were from initially, and I had the idea, and when I actually asked, I was blown away by it. How everyone sounded so similar and had so many similar themes and ways of expressing it and things they went through, but were from so many different places. And like I said, you know, it seems like these experiences are collective.
Yeah. It's 855-915-9636 if you want to join the conversation. It's Ryan Hendrickson. I'm Vin Maganzini. This is Acoustic Ceiling. And yes, we play music, but we also talk about art and poetry and all kinds of things. And that's what we're doing right now. Would you like to read another poem?
Yeah, I'll read. So a lot of them are, this one in particular, I like. It's from a poet who's from the local community. She goes under G. Constantin, but it's her name's Grace.
and what's the name of the poem?
The poem is called Atrophy. For me, her hands were bath time. Bubbles and bubbles and bubbles. She'd build me castles of pristine white while a melody of a rubber ducky danced from her lips across the soapy surface, leaving footprints in the foam. The wrinkles at the corner of her mouth framed a laugh that was breathless and shimmering. The one we knew then has long gone, but that sing-song voice remains, haunting her being, like a home abandoned, bouncing off walls, falling down steps that groan, bones broken banisters, skin-chipping paint, a reminder of something once beautiful. Her thoughts drift softly, like dust in the dawn that creeps through curtains, no purpose, no presence. Her sentences are scattered, pages ripped from novels and shoved back out of order, yellowing and smelling of lives lived and laid in ink, left on the wooden floor for the wind to walk with. The sheet with my name has vanished, and she'll never know it or me again.
Very nice. Is there another poem that you want to check out?
Yeah. This one's interesting to me. This is by, they just gave me their name, is Ray, from Kuwait. Mm-hmm. The poem is called Beauty is Death. The night sky is as beautiful as you. The stars are dead, so you said. You are twice as beautiful when you die.
It's a short one. I wasn't ready for the end there.
Yeah, some of them are very short. I shied away from putting too many short ones in here, but there are a collection. You know, Instagram being social media, people tend to share short poems because we have very little attention span on social media. Mm-hmm. You know, the book was also one of the reasons I wanted to do it is because I saw so many great long poems on social media that I thought weren't being shared because they're not as trendy. But I figured if you can mix a little bit of both together, you know, people can skim through the book, but also get more absorbed if they want to, you know, actually do some reading.
Yeah.
But yeah, I particularly like that one because the idea that, you know, the stars are these beautiful things and we look at them, but many of them could be dead. We're watching light from, you know, billions of years ago.
Mm-hmm. I think in a lot of ways, poetry, people joke around like they're not into it or it doesn't mean anything to them, but when a poetry gets under somebody's skin, it really is almost like an epidemic. People get excited about it, and they really want to share and find it. You know, the film, you probably know it well. It's Four Weddings and a Funeral. They say a poem in that film. Right after that poem, that film became very popular, that poem sold like thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of copies. People wanted to find that, a collection of poetry for that one poem, because it meant so much to them. And that was just a film. And the film was not about the poem. It was just one short scene in the film. I think it was Auden, I think, was the one.
I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen that.
Right, but that poem became outrageously popular, and maybe I'll play it in a little bit.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful. And speaking of playing, I'm going to play this song. It's by request. This is going out to Ryan.
It's a still life watercolor of a now late afternoon, as the sun shines through the curtain lace and shadows wash the room. And we sit and drink our coffee, couched in our indifference like shells upon the shore. You can hear the ocean roar in the dangling conversation and the superficial sighs, the borders of our lives. And you read your Emily Dickinson and I my Robert Frost, and we note our place with bookmarkers that measure what we've lost. Like a poem poorly written, we are verses out of rhythm, couplets out of rhyme, in syncopated time. And the dangling conversation and the superficial sighs are the borders of our lives. Yes, we speak of things that matter with words that must be said. Can analysis be worthwhile? Is the theater really dead? And how the room is softly faded, and I only kiss your shadow. I cannot feel your hand. You're a stranger now unto me, lost in the dangling conversation and the superficial sighs in the borders of our lives.
Simon Garfunkel right there with Dangling Conversation from Parsley, Sage, Rosemary, and Thyme. And now we're back to conversation with Ryan Hendrickson. He has a Instagram. I get my R's in the way there. Instagram page called Poem Wars. And Ryan Hendrickson, do you run the page? What's the right word? Do you come-a-darn the page?
Sometimes I refer to Poem Wars as we, like it's a company, but it's really just me.
Do you run more official, the Instagram page?
Yeah, exactly. It's poem_wars. And
are there any other Instagram pages like yours or no?
Yeah, there's actually a lot. There's a few big ones. By Me Poetry, like BYME Poetry, is another curator, which is what I would call this page. It's a curation page, just taking. All I do is I select poetry I like and share it.
Sure.
And I actually don't ask permission when I do it on the page. I just take a screenshot of a poem and share it and credit the author, and never had someone complain about it because, right. You know, they want their work to be shared.
Well, I mean, the thing is, you're not making millions of dollars off this Instagram page.
Yeah, I have contracts with the poets in the book, you know, in terms of the right to share their work.
Sure.
You know, on Instagram, it's just, you know, reposting is what it is. But yeah, I think people like my page and some of these other big curators, and a lot of people try to do the same thing and to success or no success. I think people like my page because they resonate with the poems that I like. Mm-hmm. So they like my taste, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's a certain type of person who like my page, probably similar taste to me. And, yeah, it's one format that I started with because it was the easiest way to get people, into this, you know, the Poem Wars community. But I do want to expand it more outside of just social media, especially talking with all these poets. They're so enthusiastic and there's so much.
Oh, good. I think we got a call.
Yeah, we got a caller.
Yes. Okay, good. Here's a caller, and let me tell them they're going to be on the air. One second. Okay, caller, you are on the air. This is WMFO. Welcome to Acoustic Sailing.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great.
Hey.
How do you like the program so far? You are on the air. What is your name?
My name's John.
John. What do you want to talk about, John?
John is one of the poets in the book.
Oh, wonderful. Welcome, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Nice to talk to you.
How you doing, Ryan?
Pretty good.
Hey, so I think it's like an amazing idea that someone could take a whole bunch of things that you just might see just like flying around the internet. You know, on the internet, it takes some time to actually go and find something. There's nothing, you know, paperbacks or just having something to read where all these are together and not just on a personal computer. It's really cool that someone could put everyone's work together in a collection and take the time for that.
Absolutely, Ryan. You're in the collection. What poem did you write for the collection?
I have it right here, actually, if you want me to read it.
Ryan? Yeah, it's good.
Johnny Valdez. The poem is called Wind. Another short one. Taking a leap of faith off a cliff, counting the layers of sediment while I wait for these wings to catch air.
Very nice. Very nice. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, John? What inspired you?
Yeah, it's without getting too, you know, being too deep there, I'm giving them too much help. But let's go through a real situation where it was really going to be a fork in the road for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's the age old saying, "You have one life. At the end, is the moments that you have." I mean, I've seen millionaires and I've seen homeless people, and there's really not much difference between them sometimes.
Sure, yeah.
And so to make this decision happen and just move forward and just to see what would happen in life, it seems like I had to take a leap. And, you know, sometimes you just don't always hit the ground real fast, and, you know, you just seen that free fall, just like, all right, let's see where it goes. But you have wings, and you're hoping that this leap of faith will give you that little gust of wind that actually sends you up, and now you're flying, now you're okay. And if you're wrong, well, you know, that's why you took a leap of faith. Sometimes your faith is wrong.
Yeah, I love the part about sediment, in which, you know, you take a leap of faith, you're kind of looking back and viewing all these layers, all these things that maybe you did in your past, as you're in that free fall. And I put it in the book as part of this part of the chapter where it is kind of reflective, but also trying to move forward and do something new with your life and get past these bad experiences and painful experiences, which I think probably is accurate for you, Johnny.
Yeah, it's very accurate. I'm a Leo, so I can be really emotional. So my experiences usually are pretty intense.
That's true. That's true.
John, have you ever considered, what do they call them? Poetry slams, like performance poetry?
There was a time, it was actually knowing Ryan and just speaking on certain things of just like of writing.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of brought back, you know, the whole thing, just life happens when you're busy making plans and all that such.
Sure.
And so I kind of really got out of touch and just seeing him writing, and it kind of brought me back to how I used to. And I used to do poetry slams before, but I haven't done in a while.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's pretty alive and well. I mean, just listen to the radio, listen to rap music. I mean, talk about rhyming. It hasn't gone away. And talk about, you know, singing and talking.
Johnny's a fantastic freestyler and singer. So, he's one of my friends here. And, I would love to go to a poetry slam with you, Johnny. I think we need to make that happen.
I think it'd be awesome. We could do it.
I'm out of the loop. Is it freestyler and poetry slammer? Are those the right words?
I'm also not as much of that community. I'm a little bit more one of the introspective poets. So I appreciate people of different styles. And,
sure.
And Johnny is more of extroverted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the first times we met or hung out, we were talking about writing and poetry, and I shared with him one of my poems. And he took the phone out of my hand. He said, "You got to read it," and he performed.
Yeah, Yeah, he hit it. At the time, he was just, you know, he was not as confident with that certain poem. And
absolutely.
I was like,
yeah,
put more gusto because the words were powerful.
Yeah, yeah, and it was actually a really important moment, and I think in our friendship it was one of the early moments, but, you know, funny enough, I'm on the radio talking about it.
Sure.
Which is probably back then something I wouldn't have done. But, yeah, Johnny performed it, and I was like, wow, you know, the words really mean a lot more when you actually, you know, project it to the world.
Sure.
And not just kind of try, as Johnny was saying, he's like, you're just reading through it really fast to get it over with, you know? So,
John, any final thoughts? We're going to have a poem read in a moment, but any final thoughts before we say goodbye for the moment?
Yeah, definitely. That I'm really honored to be in Bloom as well. It's actually the first time anyone's ever or even tried to publish anything, just to have it out there. Mm-hmm. It's really nice.
That is great. Absolutely.
And also to think about maybe future of the things that I have, and, you know, puts a little more self-worth. It was kind of good.
Wonderful.
Just to see it there, too.
Yes.
And, that... If you have a chance, everyone should check it out.
Okay.
Thanks,
thank
Johnny.
You, John. John, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Okay. We're going to continue on with the poem, and here it goes.
As for me, you may ask how I will remember him. What I thought of him. Unfortunately, there I run out of words. Perhaps you will forgive me if I turn from my own feelings to the words of another splendid bugger, W.H. Auden. This is actually what I want to say. Stop all the clocks. Cut off the telephone. Prevent the dog from barking with a juicy bone. Silence the pianos and with muffled drum, bring out the coffin. Let the mourners come. Let the aeroplanes circle moaning overhead, scribbling on the sky the message, he is dead. Put crepe bows round the white necks of the public doves. Let traffic policemen wear black cotton gloves. He was my north, my south, my east and west. My working week. My Sunday rest. My noon, my midnight, my talk, my song. I thought that love would last forever. I was wrong. The stars are not wanted now. Put out everyone. Pack up the moon and dismantle the sun. Pour away the ocean and sweep up the wood. For nothing now can ever come to any good.
It's quite a scene. Quite a poem, too.
I love that.
Yeah, pretty amazing stuff. How about another poem from Bloom?
Sure. As I talked about, you know, things get a little more hopeful as the book goes along. This one is, I particularly like this one in the sense that it's a little bit more of a verse, you know, rather than just kind of obscure non-rhyming. So this is called Freedom by Misha, and she's from Delhi, India. A border that stretches far and wide, unmarked by gunfight, bereft of barbed wire and spikes. There are same people on both the sides, flying kites in a spotless blue sky, with the freedom to glide as the kites, in a land as undivided as the sky, and watching the world through brand new eyes. Freedom from God, men, or freedom from God, freedom to voice a choice, that freedom is ours, freedom to worship anyone we like, no caste, no religion, or no race, no black, no white, no religion is wrong or right, Ram, Allah, or Jesus Christ. No more sacrifice lambs, no more sacrifice. I'm watching the world through brand new eyes. Freedom to birth a girl child, not killing her before she opens her eyes. Giving her wings to fly and rise. By the freedom to read and the freedom to write. I'm watching the world through brand new eyes. Freedom to love with one heart, not other minds. Freedom from heteronormative designs. Love at any age, any time. freedom to love of any kind, the freedom to be together, intertwined, freedom from hate, so free the hostage smiles. I'm watching the world through brand new eyes. Freedom to dream of a different life, where one faith unites all of mankind. No flags in the wind, rainbows suffice. Freedom from rich, poor, low and high, they are all alike. The sun shines on everyone in the spotlight. A slice of heaven, paradise. I watch the world through brand new eyes.
Very nice. You are listening to Acoustic Sailing. This is, I'm Vin Magazzini. I'm with Ryan Hendrickson, and we're talking about Bloom. It's a collection of poetry. They are poems of loss, heartbreak, and new beginnings. Ryan, what's on your mind?
No, I'm very grateful to have this experience, to be able to, you know, I don't know how many people are listening, but it's nice to know that I'm spreading it to an audience that isn't just mine.
Mm-hmm. Where can people buy the book and find it?
It's on Amazon. So I don't want to list out a link, too many numbers and letters, but you know, you could search my name and Bloom, so B-L-O-O-M, and my name is, my last name is Hendrickson, H-E-N. D-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. I go by R.J. Hendrickson. It's my nom de plume, first and middle name. But yeah, so you can look up that on Amazon, or you can also go to my page on Instagram, poem_wars, and you'll see links for it there as well.
So anyone with a Instagram account can easily find you, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Access to the internet, you know.
Right, yeah, there you go. Is there any particular poet that's out there today that you find very exciting or revealing or just fascinating? I mean, you know, there's the great ones from the 19th century or early 20th century. How about today, like right now? I mean, is there anyone in particular?
You know, the thing is, I think it's contemporary poetry, it's mm-hmm. hard to name single names.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of pop poets, I'd mm-hmm. say, and not to insult them, but there's a lot of poetry that I think is not very meaningful,
right,
that has become very popular. Not to say that things that are popular aren't necessarily meaningful.
But, sure.
You know, it appeals to people, and mm-hmm. it's important. But I still, you know, I have a hard time picking a single figure. My favorite, like, kind of closest to contemporary poet is Bukowski. There's something about his poetry that I think bleeds into a lot of the contemporary movement, mm-hmm. which is just very stream of thought, personal, less frills, non-rhyming, a lot of it, all of it, pretty mm-hmm. much. Just, you know, basic and human and raw mm-hmm. words. So he's probably one of my top three favorite poets.
We haven't talked about him, but what do you think about Jim Carroll?
Not as familiar with his work.
Yeah, Jim Carroll. He wrote Basketball Diaries.
Yeah,
and he wrote,
good movie.
Yeah, and he wrote a lot of terrific poems also, and he very much inspired me and inspired, you know, lots of people. And I'm just looking right now if there's any particular song by Jim Carroll that kind of knocks me out and possibly will knock you out. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but check out this one. This is he is remembering Kurt Cobain. This is a snippet from 8 Fragments for Kurt Cobain by Jim Carroll.
Genius is not a generous thing. In return, it charges more interest than any amount of royalties can cover. And it resents fame with bitter vengeance. Pills and powders only placate it a while. Then it puts you in a place where the planet's poles reverse, where the currents of electricity shift. Your body becomes a magnet and pulls to it despair and rotten teeth, cheese whiz and guns, whose triggers are shaped tenderly into a false lust in timeless illusion. Claws kept tightening, I guess, on your heart stem. The loops of feedback and distortion threaded right through Lucifer's wisdom teeth and never stopped their reverberating in your mind. And from the stage, all the faces out front seemed so hungry with an unbearably wholesome misunderstanding. From where they sat, you seemed so far up there, high and live and diving. And instead, you were swamp crawling down deeper until you tasted the earth's own blood and chatted with the buzzing-eyed insects that heroin breeds.
Yeah, this poem goes on and on about what Kurt Cobain went through and... I'll keep it in the background a little bit, but it's really poignant, and I'll never forget hearing it for the first time when I had the CD on, and I was like, hey, he's talking about Kurt Cobain.
It's a relevant topic as well, especially in Massachusetts.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And
your willpower could have sped it up, but you left that on an airplane because it wouldn't pass customs and immigration. Here's synchronicity for you. Your music's tape was inside my Walkman when my best friend from summer camp called with the news about you. I listened then. It was all there. Your music kept cutting deeper and deeper valleys of sound, less and less light, until you hit solid rock. The drill bit broke, and the valley a thin crevice, impassable in time, as time itself stopped. And the walls became vices of brilliant notes, pressing in, pressing in. Pressure. That's how...
It's almost 5 o'clock. I will... We'll continue on a little after five, but Ryan, thank you very much. The archive stops at five, so thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. And we're